Okay, welcome back everyone to the In the Eyes of Our Brother Shear, to Yosef Part 3. So we last met Yosef when he was falsely accused by Ashes Potiphar, right? He was thrown into prison, and as a result of that, he continues in this roller coaster of his ups and downs of in life. And today we're basically going to focus on his experience on being in prison itself. And there is really a lot to talk about because we do see already the character development of Yosef from, again, just a few weeks ago when we learned about the fact that he was sold by his brothers. And now we meet him not so many years later. And he's already grown and he continues to grow. So let's see, take a look at, actually, before we begin, so just to outline, so there are basically four parts to the prison story. There is the first part in which he is put into prison and he immediately becomes successful. The second part in which he... I'm just going to mute everyone because I hear a lot of background noise. Okay. Alright, there's a second part where he is brought dreams by two of his inmates, and he interprets those dreams correctly. The third part is when he is forgotten by one of these individuals who he had asked to remember him after interpreting his dream. And the fourth part is when he is ultimately remembered and then Paro takes him out. That really goes into the next story, but we'll allude to it at least this evening, and we'll begin to really delve into that next week. So let's take a look at Surah Summer 1, Perek Lamed Tes, Psukim Chaf through Chaf Gimel in Bereishis. So the Pasuk says, so Yosef's master had him put in prison where the king's prisoners were confined, but even while he was there in prison, the Lord was with Yosef. He extended kindness to him and disposed the chief jailer favorably toward him. The chief jailer put in Yosef's charge all the prisoners who were in that prison, and he was the one to carry out everything that was done there. The chief jailer did not supervise anything that was in Yosef's charge, because the Lord was with him, and whatever he did, the Lord made successful. So the first thing to note, as many of the Mefarshim point out, is he wasn't just in some regular prison. Right? He was in the king's prison. So it was not some, you know, like raunchy gang member prison. It was the elite people. So it's not like he was just thrown, you know, in to be with the wolves over here. It was a nice prison, right? That's where the wealthy businessmen go after they cheat their taxes. They go to this nice fancy prison over here. And what we also note as well is the fact that Hashem's name continues to come up, right? That's how the cycle goes in Yosef's life. Every time he goes back down again, we see Hashem's name appear many times, as we saw last week, and we see now again. We have Hashem's name just several times in these just few psukim. And the biggest question is why does God keep coming back to Yosef? Meaning it's clear that Hashem does keep coming back to him, that on every downturn that happens in Yosef's life, which Hashem was part of orchestrating, why does he keep then coming back to support him? And I think that there are really two perspectives, two ways to look at it. One is just to say, well, that's because Yosef is a very special person. And we know that all of these events are all about spelling out the life, creating the life that is meant to be of Yosef HaTzadik, what is meant to come, that he is meant to be the second to the king, and that he is meant to basically facilitate both the exile and then the ultimate redemption of the Jewish people in Egypt. So maybe Hashem stays with him even through the bad times, even when these are punishing times, because of the fact that Yosef is a special person. The truth is, though, that I would argue that this is not something that is special to Yosef, but this is rather a mashal for life that all of us can take with us, and that is that every single time we make mistakes, every single time we do things that are wrong, Hashem may punish us, but Hashem is always there even within the punishments, right? The very famous idea that in all the exiles that the Jewish people had, we didn't just go by ourselves, but HaKadosh Baruch Hu went with us. And this is clearly represented here as Yosef, in quasi the first Jew to be in exile, he experiences this exile, and he experiences these difficult moments, but Hashem is always with him, just like Hashem is with each and every one of us in the difficult moments and in the exiles of our own personal lives and national and communal lives as well. The big question is who was this prison guard? Why was this prison guard so nice to Yosef? And we alluded to the fact last week that maybe this prison guard was good friends with Potiphar, right? Maybe Potiphar actually realized that his wife was just crying wolf once again. And maybe she had tried to do these sort of illicit things with other the servant boys that worked in their household, and this wasn't so uncommon. And maybe, you know, he loved Yosef, he trusted Yosef, and so he said to the prison guard, who was his best friend, by the way, make sure you take care of this guy, because I'm not sure he really did anything wrong, so take care of him. Unbelievably, in source number 2, it says in the Sefer, Lemechsa Atik, which is a Sefer which I used a lot when we spoke about the Avos and the Imahos, but it's a Sefer that was compiled by Rabbi Chaim Kanievsky, in which he basically gives an important important and relevant information. And he says over here, who is the Sar Beis HaSa'ar? Who is the chief of the prison? Who Potiphar? Shaya Gamkin Sar Beis HaSa'ar. So what, not only was Potiphar big stuff in other ways, but he was this prison guard who was in charge of Yosef, who put Yosef in the charge of the entire prison, which is an unbelievable idea. If we go back to the perspective that Potiphar really was mad at Yosef and he wanted him in prison, then if we say that Potiphar was mad at Yosef and wanted to put him in prison, and that's because he believed the story that Ishus Potiphar told him, then okay, could be. But once you realize that it's Potiphar himself, clearly he wasn't as mad as him as we were always led to believe, and clearly perhaps there is a deeper perspective over here that Potiphar, even through the event that took place last week that we read about, that we spoke about in the class, it must be that there's much more behind the lines over there, and that Potiphar probably didn't actually believe the story that his wife told, and he had to bring Yosef to prison to save face, but that he still continued to take care of him. An alternative way of now looking at things presents a curious situation for us in terms of how we interpret the actions of Yosef, right? We always assume that, what's wrong with Yosef? How come he can't see God in his life? Every single step he sees God there. He's taken care of when he gets to Egypt, and he's taken care of when he gets to prison. But again, now if we realize that this individual was Potiphar himself, maybe Yosef thought that he had one stroke of luck when he got to Egypt at first, and he met this guy named Potiphar that ended up making him in charge of everything. All was good. Then he had this terrible thing happen with his guy's wife, but still this guy was good to him, and he kept looking after him. So why would Yosef see God in his life at all? How could you blame him? He saw mostly his own actions enable him to reach heights, and Potiphar was the one taking care of him, not God. What does God have anything to do with it? So maybe you can see a little bit, be down the kashchus Yosef a little bit, maybe that he didn't always see God, because God wasn't always as clearly apparent. The other perspective, however, and maybe why Yosef was punished, is because it's true that God wasn't necessarily on the forefront, but anyone should know that whenever good things happen, these are orchestrated events by HaKadosh Baruch Hu himself. HaKadosh Baruch Hu was always the one pulling the strings. So that's another perspective to say that maybe he should have actually been able to see God, even though it wasn't as apparent as it could have been. Okay, now as we continue through the story, the next major event that takes place is that which Yosef is brought these two dreams of the Sar HaOfim and the Sar HaMashkim, the cupbearer and the head baker. They both go over to Yosef. Let's take a look now at source number 3, Perek Mem, Psukim Dalet through Chaf Beis. There's a whole section over here that we'll read through quickly. It says as follows, the chief steward assigned Yosef to them, and he attended them. When they had been in custody for some time, both of them, the cupbearer and the baker of the king of Egypt, who were confined in the prison, dreamed in the same night, each his own dream, and each dream with its own meaning. When Yosef came to them in the morning, he saw that they were distraught. He asked Pharaoh's courtiers, who were with him in custody in his master's house, saying, why do you appear downcast today? And they said to him, we had dreams, and there is no one to interpret them. So Yosef said to them, surely God can interpret. Tell me your dreams. Then the chief cupbearer told his dream to Yosef, and he said to him, in my dream there was a vine in front of me, and on the vine were three branches. It had barely budded when out came its blossoms, and its clusters ripened into grapes. And Paro's cup was in my hand, and I took the grapes, pressed them into Paro's cup, and placed the cup in Paro's hand. Yosef said to him, this is its interpretation. The three branches are 3 days. In 3 days Paro will pardon you and restore you to your post. You will place Paro's cup in his hand, as was your custom formerly when you were his cupbearer. But think of me when all is well with you again, and do me the kindness of mentioning me to Paro, so as to free me from this place. For in truth I was kidnapped from the land of the Hebrews, nor have I done anything here that they should have put me in the dungeon. When the chief baker saw how favorably he had interpreted, he said to Yosef, in my dream, similarly, there were 3 open work baskets on my head. Right, Yosef? It's clear that you always interpret dreams well. So here's my dream. Maybe you'll see something good in this. In the uppermost basket were all kinds of food for Paro that a baker prepares, and the birds were eating it out of the basket above my head. Yosef answered, this was not as good for you. This is its interpretation. The 3 baskets are 3 days, and in 3 days Paro will lift off your head and impale you upon a pole, and the birds will pick off your flesh. And on the 3rd day, his birthday, Paro made a banquet for all of his officials, and he singled out his chief cupbearer and his chief baker from among his officials. He restored the chief cupbearer to his cupbearing, and he placed the cup in Paro's hand, but the chief baker he impaled, just as Yosef had interpreted for them. Interesting to note, of course, that God is only mentioned once over here. This is, again, seems to be the pattern in Yosef's life. God is readily there. If Yosef was looking for him, he would have seen God very easily. But then when it comes to Yosef referencing his own life and speaking about himself, God does not come up that often because Yosef doesn't necessarily see God as often as he actually should be seeing him. So let's start from the very beginning. First of all, how long was Yosef in prison for? Was it just like a few months, a few days, a couple of years, or was it a long period of time? So there's a machlokus over here, obviously, and there's some perspectives that say that he was in prison just for 2 years. Another perspective say that he was actually in prison for as many as 12 years. If it's 2 years, then okay, maybe there may not have necessarily been as much growth. However, if it was 12 years, one would like to make the argument that Yosef went through a lot of growth over this time period. And if he went through growth over this time period, then we'd like to see what that growth is. So let's try to take a look, and let's go back to the Pesukim now and see if we can find the growth that Yosef had experienced. So the first one is that if you look at the first underline that I have when I italicized it over here, this is an emotion and an experience that we see with Yosef that we don't experience until now. He saw that they were distraught, right? He said, What's wrong with you guys? Why do you guys look so sad and depressed today? That's not something that we've seen in Yosef previously. If you think back just a couple of weeks ago, when we mentioned Yosef with his brothers, he told them all about these dreams. He was the least empathetic person ever. He could tell stories and stories about his greatness and not see at all why someone might be bothered by that, especially when he was referring to the people who were going to be his subjects. When he was referring to them as his subjects, he couldn't understand, why would you be sad? This is such great news that I'm going to be your ruler. Now, here we have, just several years later in the life of Yosef, and we find that he is able to empathize, he's able to see pain and difficulty and distress in the life of other individuals, and he feels for them, he wants to help them. How does he respond to them? True, he does not mention God's name as frequently maybe as he should have, and recognize him perhaps as much as he should have, but how does he refer to God? Well, first of all, so let's take a step back. When it came to with his brothers, we seem to not really find God in that story at all. When it came to how Yosef interacted in the house of Potiphar, basically God comes up, but virtually not at all. Here is the first time in which Yosef clearly attributes help in his life to God. Again, maybe not enough, but he begins to associate the help in his life and the wisdom that he's acquired in his life to God. And he says, tell me your dreams, because I can't interpret them, but God has enabled me and given me the capacity to be able to interpret them. He is now not only able to see the perspective of others and empathize with others, but he's also able to assist them and realize that that assistance is coming from God. And also, he's not telling others his dreams and his goals, he's listening to other people's dreams and to other people's goals, right? So this mix of empathizing and seeing Hashem clearly represent the true growth that Yosef has experienced over this period of time when he is in prison, and the true character development that you would hope to see in this individual who we eventually will refer to as Yosef HaTzadik. When that part actually, when we start referring to him as HaTzadik, is a good question. Not for right now, we'll refer to that in a later shiur, but this clearly shows the growth that he experiences. The other major question that we have to understand over here is, who in the world were these people? Why does the Sar HaOfim and the Sar HaMashkim, this baker and this wine person, why do they play such an incredibly important role in the life of Yosef? They're so random and so, who cares about them? And if you want to say that they're all about showing how the series of events that will lead to the ultimate placement of Yosef as the second to the king, etc., so just say as follows. We had two other guys that were in prison with Yosef. They had dreams. Yosef interpreted them both correctly. Yosef was forgotten, as we'll see in a second, and then he was taken out of prison. I just read for you 19 psukim or 18 psukim about this. Who cares? Who cares about their dreams? Who cares about all their problems in life? What is the big deal over here? And the answer is, I believe, as many allude to, it's a beautiful idea that we do not have the time or the space in this year to fully develop, but we'll at least touch on it. And that is that the truth is, these characters probably parallel other characters in Tanakh. And this is the perfect time to be giving this year, because there are many parallels between the Yosef story and the Esther story, right? And in particular, the characters that I would be referring to as the parallel over here is that the Sar HaOfim and the Sar HaMashkim, they sound a lot like the individuals by the name of Big Son and Seresh in the Megillah. Who were Big Son and Seresh? Well, Big Son and Seresh we know quite well. They were the ones who started the whole Purim story. How? Because they were meeting in private, and they were trying to plan to kill the king. They were going to kill Ahasuerus, and Mordechai overheard them. Mordechai overheard this terrible plot, and he said, "Hey, Ahasuerus, you might want to be aware that you have these two people who are trying to kill you in your palace." Ahasuerus said, "Oh my goodness." He took care of them. He killed them. And what happens to Mordechai? He is forgotten. What happens in our story over here? You have the Sarah Ofim and the Sarah Mashkim. Why were they put into prison? Well, the Medrash explains that they were put into prison because Paro found things that looked like they should not have been found. One of them was for the wine guy. There was a fly found in the wine, and for the baker, there was a rock found in it. Maybe they were trying to kill their king as well. And so, what happens to them? They're thrown into prison. Yosef, quote unquote, saves one of their lives. He interprets the dream positively, and the wine bearer ends up being saved. What happens to him? He is forgotten as well. I don't want to read through it now because there's like a lot to talk about here, and it's almost, you know, not worth starting to pull the thread because we just won't finish tonight if we do that. But I did give you a fascinating article over here that Rabbi Jachter wrote in source number 4, and the link is there as well if you're interested. There's also other materials as well that I'd be happy to reference you to. I'm certainly not the first one to make this parallel, but there is a fascinating parallel over there. But anyways, what it does for us is that in seeing the parallel between these two stories, we now understand the importance of the Sarah Ofim and the Sarah Mashkim, and that they are clearly meant to represent something much larger. Perhaps what you could say they represent is that in the same way in the Purim story, that Big Son and Seresh, the role they play is so pivotal, and you could assume that God is not at all involved in the Purim story, but you see that because they were placed there, and because Mordechai happened to be there, and he heard that, and then he told Ahasuerus later on, right, because the small thing that seemed to not include God, and we now understand that God is included, so too we have over here, right? All Yosef was doing was that he was sitting in prison, and if he did not want to see God, if he was not looking for God, he could have easily, you know, glanced over God and not have seen him. But anyone who was looking at this, certainly from the bird's eye point of view, from our perspective when we're reading the text, clearly the Sarah Ofim and the Sarah Mashkin were placed there so that Yosef would be able to have this experience, and that he'd be able to interpret these dreams, and that he would be given this opportunity to get a slight way out of prison. Now, the question is, was it a good thing that he did when he relied on this individual, when he said, "Please remember me when you get out, and tell Paro to take me out of prison"? So if you take a look at source number 5, then the very next pasuk in this saga, the Sarah Mashkim, this wine guy, did not remember Yosef at all. He forgot him, which evidently means that Yosef was not taken out of prison. He has to stay there a little bit longer. So the question is, was it a bad thing for Yosef to ask this guy to remember him, or was it a good thing, or was it a neutral thing? If you take a look at Rashi in source number 6, Rashi makes it clear that it was a very bad thing that he did. That why? L'achar mikan, after this, he had asked him to remember him, he immediately forgot him. Why? Bipnesha tala bo Yosef l'zachro. Because Yosef asked him to remember him. He said, "You remember me." And what happened? Hus kaklios asur shtei shanim. He was put back into prison, or he was left to rot in prison for 2 more years. Shenemar ashri agever asher sam Hashem v'tacho, Velopana el rahavim, that praises the person who trusts in Hashem and doesn't put his trust in the other people of the world. Velobatach al mitzrim, that hakruyim rahav, and that the rahavim in this pasuk is referring to the Egyptians. So praise it as a person who trusts in Hashem and not in the Egyptians. Yosef did, however, trust in Hashem Yosef did trust in the Egyptians and not in Hashem, and therefore he was punished by being forgotten and left to rot there for another couple of years. Rabbeinu Bachya continues in the same path in agreeing with Rashi. This is the classical interpretation of why Yosef ends up being forgotten, that it is a punishment. And here's what Rabbeinu Bachya says in source number 7. How do we reconcile this with the comment of Bereishis Rabbah that Yosef had 2 years added to the time he had to stay in jail because he said the above-cited 2 words to the chief of the butlers, that he was punished for pleading with the chief of the butlers to become the instrument of orchestrating his release? It was not fitting for someone of Yosef's caliber to be on the lookout for an instrument that God should appoint to bring about changes in his fate. He should have been content to trust that God would be able to find such opportunities when he deemed the right fit, the time right for this. So what we clearly see over here is that, right, someone said in Shul, that I don't understand any person in their right mind who found himself in a difficult situation would have looked for any leeway. That's what we call a shtadlus. This is not, Yosef doing something wrong over here. And the explanation, the classical and traditional explanation, is that no, you're right. It would not have been bad if you or I had done this. But Yosef was not Yosef. Yosef was not some Joe Schmo. He was Yosef HaTzadik, and he should have known better. There is, however, an alternative way of looking at this, and I have to apologize ahead of time. I don't know who this is, who I'm going to quote for you in source number 8. It's something that I found online from what I believe is a reputable source, and it's the other perspective, or you know, the other side of the coin, so I wanted to share it with you, but again, I apologize because it's not my normal way to tell you someone who I don't know. But his name is Rabbi Azariah Feigo. He's from 16th century Italy, and he writes as follows. This is a quote of what he says written in English. He says as follows: "Even if you would think of me with yourself when Paro benefits you, and even if you will do me a kindness and mention me to Paro, the most you could do is to get me out of this building. That would solve my immediate physical problem, but not my spiritual problem. For indeed, I was kidnapped from the land of the Hebrews and thus expelled from before God. Here I have done nothing for my spiritual betterment, and therefore God has caused that they have put me in the pit." In other words, what he's doing over here is that he's reading between the lines and putting a lot of text in there that is not actually there. And let's keep reading. "Without this interpretation," says Rav Feigo, "one might wonder how the butler could be so ungrateful as to forget Yosef. With this interpretation, however, it is understandable. In effect, Yosef told the butler that his help was not wanted. The reason Yosef said this was to emphasize that the interpretation of dreams comes from Hashem, and that Yosef deserved no credit." In other words, Yosef was telling this guy, "By the way, you're gonna, you know, you're gonna not want to forget me, and you're gonna, you know, want to give me help. But the truth is, I don't need your help. You could not forget me, right? You could. That's your prerogative, but that's not what I need." So it's a total, you know, opposite of what the pasuk actually tells us. But it is an important interpretation, I think, to represent the full spectrum of views over here. What we now finally see is that after all this time, that Yosef did experience some growth while he was in prison. Again, whether it was 2 years or 12 years, he did experience some sort of development, and we then find him come out to be released from prison in source number 9 in Perek Mem Aleph, Psukim Test through Yudalid. The chief cupbearer then spoke up and said to Paro the famous words, "As chata'aya nimas kirayom, I must mention today of my offenses. Once Paro was angry with his servants and placed me in custody in the house of the chief steward, together with the chief baker. We had dreams the same night, he and I, each of us a dream with a meaning of its own. A Hebrew youth was there with us, a servant of the chief steward, and when he told him of our dreams, he interpreted them for us, telling each of the meaning of his dream. And as he interpreted for us, so it came to pass, I was restored to my post, and the other was impaled. And thereupon Paro sent for Yosef, and he was rushed from the dungeon. He had his hair cut and changed his clothes." Right, this is important over here to make note of, that before Yosef was playing with his own hair, here Yosef is not playing with his hair. Here others are doing that for him, but he is certainly not doing that himself, and he ultimately appears before Paro, and this introduces Yosef to the next stage, and really the final chapter of his life in many ways, and that is his relationship and ultimate position and working connection with Paro, the king of Egypt. So we'll have to pick up from here next week. There's still a lot more to talk about. In particular, we'll have to begin to develop and understand what the relationship with Paro and Yosef was actually like, but for now, I'll stop right here, wishing everyone a beautiful week and a beautiful evening, and God willing, we'll be back same time next week. Okay. Good night, everyone. Shabbat Shalom.